So, first, do we have any kind of burning questions from this evening's presentation? Concerns or anything like that? Anything you'd like to share? Yeah.
Is the purpose to, when you say let go of your thoughts and to be present, what is that actually, what does it mean? I mean, what does it mean to be present? How do you sort of think about that in terms of?
Well, it's interesting, I think. Wonderful question.
I can't think of a better question.
That's it. A plus.
I can just leave it at that.
Figure it out. Tell us.
We're being introduced to what it really means to be here. You know, really being here and now. And that seems like something that's rather foreign to most of us. And in fact, all of us, from any kind of point of view, when we're thinking, we're not here. We're somewhere else. We're, you know, processing, we're engaging, and oftentimes we're distracted. So what we're trying to do here is we're not interested in changing our thoughts. We're not trying to reform our thinking process. There are techniques to do that, but that's not what the meditation practice is. So we're not introducing a lot. We're trying to stay with the discussion of this that's in this book. So I didn't bring up techniques for working with the thoughts. But in brief, if you want to just understand that, you know, if you can actually simply see your thinking, whatever it is, just see it. Mm-hmm. And just, if you need to, just label it. Just thinking. You know, that's enough. You know, and not try to do anything at all. Don't judge it. Don't praise it or blame it or get involved in it. But just let it be at that. And then you can sort of use your breath, which we're using in our meditation, to relax and let go, so that that kind of grip that is in your attention can be released and you can return to really just being present. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
Yes, thank you. Yeah.
I mean, it's very arduous work.
Yeah.
And also, we discover we can often find ourselves extremely bored. Mm-hmm. So our teacher talked about hot boredom and cool boredom. Hot boredom is when we're simply trying to get out of being here at all. I mean, I can think of 1,000 reasons why I want to go out that door right now, get my car, and I can go anywhere, and I'll feel much better than where I am right now.
Yes.
But, you know, if I just let go of that, that's hot boredom, and just recognize this is going only driving us around in circles. So we have something called cool boredom, which is just relaxing with it. We're just interested in being here. This is all. And it's not because it's so nice in here and, you know, there are lots of pretty pictures and things to get lost in or looking at the furniture and thinking about all the work that went on the floor or any of that kind of stuff. It's just being here. It's kind of naked, you know.
Sorry, yeah, thank you. Well, can I ask them another question? Because I felt myself getting tired or sleepy, so I mean, where's the line with meditation where you almost feel like you're falling asleep?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's great.
Emily, you want to take that?
So I think there's a piece of like being present means you're with whatever's happening for yourself right now. And sometimes that's not very comfortable. Mm-hmm. And so that, you know, but thinking about stuff is one way to get away, and the not being awake is another way. So, and another one is sometimes you come here in the evening and you're tired, and sort of if you're not doing something, then your body's like, we're really tired, can we take a nap? You know, and there, some teachers will say, like, if you're really tired, you know, close your eyes for a couple of minutes, and then, you know, or do something else, but... So it's being aware of yourself being here, and like I said, sometimes it's not that much fun.
If you're doing it at home, you know, the best thing to do is start in short sessions, like try for 10 minutes, and then extend that a little bit, you know, like every day to get up to 20, 25 minutes. And you'll make, if you find yourself often just getting really fuzzy, just get up and stretch. You know what I mean? It's not like we're trying to get into an endurance test. But when you're in a practice session where you're actually meaning and wanting to stay with meditation, then refreshing yourself on those points that we brought up about posture and flashing on the environment and the space, and also raising your gaze where you're looking up and out, that can be forms of refreshment.
Also, if you ever have insomnia, it's a great opportunity to practice because you're not sleepy. So, you're more wide awake than ever before. Seeing someone's going through 3 a.m. right now. This will continue until about July. Yeah. I'll get back. But every single year, from March until the end of June, I go through 3 a.m. insomnia. Get up and practice. Yeah. No idea why it's been like that. Yes, I'm
doing it. You can call me.
So, are you up at 3 a.m.? Well, no, but it's a great time for practice. It's only for 2 hours. It's only for 2 hours. Wow.
That's when the robins start singing.
So I get up at 3, I practice, and I'm in bed by 5, and I'm back asleep.
There was an article in the Times about it not long ago. Yeah. Some woman went through all the novels of Jane Austen during that time.
The worst thing you can do is turn on a computer because blue light will make you think it's time to get up. But if you just keep the lights nice and dim and you do something.
But it's very strange, though. You can be, I'm going to bring your two questions together. You can be present even when you're falling asleep.
Mm-hmm. True.
Yeah. And because being present is a natural thing, just cover it over. And so meditation just allows that natural thing to emerge more and more. Mm-hmm. But you can experience it anytime, anywhere. Mm-hmm. It's not like foreign to who we are. So, you know, I find myself, you know, drooping every once, especially like evening sitting after dinner, full day. Long drive ahead, it's like, I want to pass out, but you can be present, even then. And then what happens is you wake up spontaneously.
Mm-hmm. So what Joseph is saying is actually that our natural state is really present. And that's why meditation is really important.
And that's why we get nostalgic about being present.
Yes!
Because if we didn't experience it, we wouldn't want it.
Wow, that's really profound. Can you say more about that?
Probably not. But it's like Buddha, it's Buddha nature. It's like, you know, if enlightenment is possible, it has to be inherent. Otherwise, we'd be being somebody we're not. What we're doing is being somebody we are.
Yeah, we're discovering
awake.
We're uncovering that because it's covered over, and all those thoughts keep us from that realization, which is always there. And that's why we use the term Buddha nature, that we all have that awake nature as our fundamental birthright, you could say. But it's covered over so much that we just don't see it. But when you stop and meditate, and you're making a real definite effort to be willing to drop the thinking and touch in with that potential. It's not like we're searching for it, or if we didn't touch it in this meditation session, oh, I'm still a loser, or I never get it. That's not the point. It's just you're willing to just experience sitting there and going through all the conditions of storms and rain and boredom and whatever, and that opening may come or not, but you're just willing to be there and knowing that there's that potential there. It's always there.
And it's so close, we can't believe it. It's so good, we can't possibly believe it. It's so simple. Yeah, we just can't believe that either. We just don't believe anything can be so right now complete in itself without needing any fixing.
But if we try to get there from here, we'll screw ourselves up. Mm-hmm. It actually we let it happen to us, mm-hmm. instead of having to create something.
So one quick clarification, because some people may not know the term, that the name Buddha is just, it means awakened one. Okay. So most people think like that's Buddha, but you can also have a little, with a little b, which just means anyone who's an awakened one, which is all of us can be.
And Buddha is just is an example. It's like, it's not, nobody worships Buddha. It's just Buddha, somebody who was willing to sit down and look at his mind. And then he was asked to teach and show other people. So he did.
There's a really wonderful teacher who I very much admire, Andrew
Holochek,
who said, we miss it because we're looking out there for awareness. Mm-hmm. But in fact, we're sitting in her lap mm-hmm. already. So it's not out there. We couldn't get away from it. We've been sitting in her lap the whole time. She's not out in front of us. And it's a she.
Back to Michael, but I just found that your gentle guidance about coming back to posture, the breathing, being in the body, and then as you took us through the steps about even not being distracted by sounds and the resonation, what I found over time was the hot boredom, as you put it, anxiety and thoughts and emotions, and even an itch, the ephemerality of it, because you're so in tune with the moment, the time passage, which can trigger a thought about the past, or like I gotta go do something, they start to disappear. And that's what I found. Like an itch, which she sees me everywhere. So the annoyances sort of disappear. And you were saying, don't judge it, you know, don't try to make it go away. It just sort of evaporates if you just stay in that kind of continuous procession. So, I mean, I just like within the first session, you see these results. I hate to use that word, but.
So, the one thing we do have some volitional control over is our attention. Mm-hmm. You know, where we place our attention. Mm-hmm. And what we discover is our attention is constantly being pulled at, yanked at, and you know, the doorbells are ringing from all different directions. The phones, the emails, everything is electronically zapping us and requesting our attention. People build an enormous amount of wealth around attracting people's attention to their products, to their services, and to the forms of life that just basically occupy this world, which in themselves may or may not have any value or interest, but the difficulty is making that discernment. And so we have a term called prajna, which means discrimination. And that's a basic natural wisdom we have in ourselves, a capacity to make that kind of a decision. Seeing it, just seeing clearly about that. So we train in seeing clearly. We'll go into this some more. So in the coming weeks, we're going to be talking about something called Vipassana, or clear seeing. And we're going through the four mindfulnesses right now. And we're still into the mindfulness of body, and we're kind of going into mindfulness of feeling, which will be taken up next week.
Excuse me.
I'm sorry. You know me. I'm Kim.
Hi, Kim.
I'm Bob's friend.
Do you want to join us? There's a seat right here.
Yes.
Why don't you join us?
Come on in.
My son's graduating tomorrow.
Oh,
so
very good.
Oh, congratulations.
Well, that's great.
Thanks.
Here, take this seat and I'll try not to bite you. What's your name?
One thing I personally struggle with, have since I started meditating, is the when you feel that you need to stop doing it because you're not doing it right. Mm-hmm. And that's just a constant, you know, having a bad meditation session or You know, just that it's that desire to get up and just go do something else because this isn't working. And just being able to settle and go, okay, that's my ego right there saying, judging this experience.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you're having expectations, mm-hmm. and because you want to have something nice, mm-hmm. and you're not really willing to strip yourself down to just being here unconditionally. Mm-hmm. What we want to do is understand that this Buddha nature is completely unconditioned. It has nothing to do with having a past, present, or future. It's completely beyond all those, and it's always here and now. So, you know, having a pleasant experience can oftentimes be distraction, because then you think, oh, fine, you know. But, you know, maybe having a really difficult time on the cushion is actually really quite rich and learning. You learn something about how your mind is working. And, you know, you begin to learn how painful it is, your confusion.
Yeah.
My confusion, it's all confusion. It doesn't belong to anybody. It's just how it is, you know.
The other thing is, in the West, we have a tendency to want to know how to do something and do it well in order to do it. Right. We want to get good at it.
Yes.
And,
well, everybody does. No, yeah, I mean, it's a natural human tendency.
Yeah. I think particularly in our society, there's this approach of, I've got to do this the right way.
Well, again, that's going to serve somebody's well-being, right? It's going to serve me.
Mm.
So all of this is worth noting. If you see somebody if you see yourself saying, I got to get out of here, this is terrible, just look at who's saying that.
Yeah.
You know, who is actually saying that? Where are these thoughts coming from? I mean, who's thinking these thoughts? Do we know anybody who's there? I mean, this is things we can find out about through our meditation practice.
I had a joke with somebody. We're talking about this whole idea of getting good at something by doing it for 10,000 hours. And I said, the only thing I've probably done for 10,000 hours is meditation practice, and I don't think it works that way. You don't get good at it.
You can't get into college based on your meditation skills.
or play a concert either.
Or make $1 million.
I really enjoyed the last time I was here. I know it was 2 weeks that passed. But I was really starting to learn, because I'm someone that can't sit still. Hardly very ever. I was born March 10th. I was supposed to be born April 10th. So I'm one of those people that
started there.
And so I like your group. I like your ways. And I was talking a lot about to Bob about it. And I do enjoy coming here.
Oh,
I'm so sorry I walked in.
That's okay. You can always come in anytime.
Yeah.
People sometimes can't come early, and it's okay. Mm-hmm. You can just come in, find a spot, join us. It doesn't matter. It's fine.
You showed up.
And you can leave early after meditation without staying for class. Up to you.
I'm here. Thank you.
I wonder if anybody has a question about what it means to just, how did you just describe it when you were giving meditation instruction? If you have thoughts or an idea, just drop them or drop it. What does that, what is that? Or does anybody have any?
I thought about that, and I thought that if I had heard that without knowing about following the breath, I wouldn't have known how to do it. So I think the thing is to have the, just about that, how do you, like, just drop your thoughts. It's like, I mean, the thoughts are there, and it's just, we just look back or think, I don't pay attention to it, just pay attention to the breath. Mm-hmm. So it does actually serve it does interrupt the thought. Usually you're thinking about something, you're trying to figure something out, and you go on for hours doing that. Here, that thing will come up, and then when you realize it's coming up, you think of, you pay attention to your breath. But the interesting paradoxical thing I find out, because I haven't solved problems much more in meditation than when I'm actually doggedly trying to think it through. Anything during the day that was bothering me or beyond comes up, and then I know I just look at the breath, and then often a solution does come. So that's
Following your breath is a real nuisance. Because we manage to do it all the time anyway without being told to do it. So why in the world do we do it here? Because it, basically, I think because it's a nuisance. It interrupts our drift. And the same with walking. When we walk, we aren't following the breath. The instruction on the walking is to be aware not of the breath, but of, it's a different object. It's the object of heel, toe, heel, toe. And at the same time, being enough aware so we don't bang into someone. So there's a different object, and there are all kinds of objects. And they basically are some kind of a nuisance to keep us from just not paying attention at all.
A lot of what you said, Susan, made me think is, I think you compressed it a little bit too much. Because what happens is we're solving problems. I guess you have to solve problems. And all of a sudden, we wake up from that, just real briefly. And then it's like breath. So it's not like we go from thought to breath, but there's a process of waking up that happens really quickly that we use to sort of, like a shift, like to pivot to the breath. And so we're actually trying to not cultivate that, but notice that. When that's happening, that how many times do our thoughts actually wake us up? It's very interesting. They don't just lead us to darkness all the time. Sometimes they, you know, oh, and all of a sudden here we are. Well, that's presence. Okay. Over and over and over.
So I think to pick up on that, in contrast to what you described, appreciate what you said, there are other mechanisms when they're not at work. Or fiercely working on something where you can have a lucid dream or between conscious and subconscious in the middle of the night, insomnia, a great idea comes from the shower. So there are spaces in which outside the ordinary that I think a new idea emerges. Or, but what you're all saying just now is that this experience is not necessarily that either, because you have to detach from those intrusive moments, whether it's the shower or if it's like not being able to sleep. So it's just the emptying out that I think is.
Yeah.
I don't know if the word is to call it a goal, but it's just, you said enter the space. And there's no more distinctions between yourself, your breathing, the body, and the space.
Well, I think what happens initially when we talk about, I introduce the notion of breathing or using the breath because it's a reminder I can sort of get out of this thought. But as Joseph says, there's something that precedes that, which is a noticing, but initially it might just be a remembrance or a flash on the breath. And then as time goes on, maybe you begin to understand that there's this other, this kind of immediacy, this perception that actually then is what precedes the actual process of letting go. So it just, you know, a little more closer into that instant of recognition. So, yeah, thoughts can wake us up. I think that's an interesting point rather than thinking I got to get rid of these thoughts, because a lot of our confusion is based on the notion that we're not supposed to be thinking anything, that thoughts are supposed to be gotten rid of. And I don't know. I mean, I know it builds up in everybody's minds, but, you know, actually thoughts are okay if we just need to understand how to relate to them.
Mm-hmm. I just don't know anybody who's ever gotten rid of thoughts. Ever. I mean, you know, what I think they're more or less intrusive, or you could sort of, they're sort of described as like a torrent of thoughts versus a tiny little trickle of like almost like background. And you know that that's happening, but you're not getting hooked by any of them. And so I just always thought it was so fascinating that people have this misconception of my mind was a, I'm going to make my mind a complete blank.
Mm. Well, I met a
guy once. Successful meditation.
I met a guy once who, I had a bookstore and this guy came in and his girlfriend was bringing him in. He said, I don't know what to do with this guy. He stopped his thinking. You know, and he just couldn't do anything. I mean, he had to be like kind of moved around because he wasn't even acknowledged that, for instance, if you're walking down the street that the stoplight's red or green, you know. He just absolutely shut everything off. And I said, you've got to get this guy some professional help.
That's a schizophrenic break. Yeah. That's not enlightenment.
Right.
Did you have something?
Yeah, I was just going to say that I find that breath is rather relaxing. Mm-hmm. If you can stop... Excuse me. Like, I wonder, sometimes when you hear about people who have been put in solitary confinement or something, and I wonder, how did they get through that? And then if you feel like you have some control over, you know, your mind in this very close-to-your-body way, and it's a pretty healthy way, you don't have to be moving too much, I think it's very... comforting to think that you could just think about your breath and kind of relax your mind that way.
I found during periods of illness or depression, I mean, I just went from one breath to the next. You know, they say, you know, AA, you go one day at a time. This was one breath at a time, one moment at a time. You know, it was the way that I could get through something difficult.
Mm-hmm.
I've also recognized something that helps with drowsiness, that I found that right on the edge of a rising thought, there's some energy.
Mm.
Have anyone else felt that? Like,
ooh.
You can actually kind of feel the thought coming up.
Yes.
And if you just kind of stay with that energy instead of dropping into the thought, there's... If for me it wakes me up, and it's kind of like riding on. Well, it's like in motorcycle racing. Have you ever seen a motorcycle go around a turn?
Mm-hmm.
It looks like the bike is falling.
Yeah,
yeah.
It is. It's actually falling, but momentum is keeping it up.
Yeah, right.
So there's this line that you're following. Of perpetually falling, but not falling.
Yeah.
And so, and there's that. It's a state that's just awesomely full of a lot of energy. But the same thing I thought with riding the edge of a thought.
That's wonderful.
It's like, is it kind of like that moment when you're like you're falling asleep?
Mm-hmm.
And then all of a sudden, like, you wake up.
I don't know if it's the same. I've just noticed that if I can slow down enough and start to watch for the thoughts, and I know it's probably not a great mindfulness practice because I'm watching. That's me watching.
Well,
But I'm also watching it, and if I just let it stay right there at the edge and don't let it manifest, don't give it any more energy, there is energy there. And that can help just stay awake.
I have a really simple solution, which is there have been times that I've been so tired from work or whatever, and I knew that if I came here, I would fall asleep, and I didn't want to fall asleep. Because meditation actually is work. I mean, you're actually doing something.
Mm-hmm.
So I would actually take a short nap before meditating. It sounds weird. Naps and then I'd be awake enough to...
I vote for that.
Nap time before meditation.
Sometimes I just take them here.
And I take them for a nap.
We'll add it to the schedule.
What's that?
We'll add it to the schedule. Nap time.
We could have a whole retreat.
Feels a little like my kindergarten experience.
For quieting the mind.
I didn't appreciate
it. Stay simple. Come back. Just simply, you're coming back to being here. You're just here, and it's always just returning. You're returning all the time. Returning, and the distraction returns. So it becomes almost a rhythm of your experience of just being present and then getting lost and then coming back. So that's how we train in that. But try it in short sessions so you're not pushing it too hard.